Football returned to Berkshire on Saturday and very quickly reminded us why we perhaps shouldn't have missed it as much as we did. Welcome to the Tireless Den, episode 226 with your host Mark Mayer, as we talk about Reading's triumphant, well, for about 91 minutes, return to championship action after the coronavirus pandemic. To do that with me, Ollie Allen joins me after we had a chat, Ollie, last week. I remember we both predicted 1-0 wins, and so close we were to picking up the points.
Yeah, it was snatched away from us at the last minute. But no, I loved having a weekend of just straight football on the TV back and been enjoying the sunshine this afternoon so far. So all in all, not a bad few days apart from that last minute equaliser.
Absolutely. Adam Jones, how's it going as well, mate? It's nice to have you back on the show after a few months' absence.
Yeah, hello, Mark. Yes, I have three words for you, and I'm going to keep this short. Football is back. Finally, football is back. And those are the only three words that matter.
Absolutely. And, of course, before we go on to the next part of the show, as ever, it is always important to thank our sponsors, ZC Des Films, and our Patreon campaign as you continue to donate to us. Every little bit helps, and hopefully, finally, you might be able to tell. Got a nice bit of fancy microphone operations working myself, so you can probably pick up my voice exactly as it was and pick up all of the things going on in my neighbourhood around me much clearer just for sound effects. Also, before we move on, a sad note, really, that we obviously have to address. The Tireless Den wants to extend its condolences and deep sadness at the awful incident that took place at Forby Gardens on Saturday night. To have such a terrible thing happen to innocent people in our town leaves us all feeling absolutely rotten, and our thanks goes to the emergency services who rushed to the scene, and our thoughts and strength are with all the victims and their loved ones.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Okay, so I don't know how many people are like me in this category, but I'm assuming there's a fair, probably hundreds, maybe even thousands, who tuned in about 10 to 3 on Saturday, having purchased my match pass to go and watch Reading's first game back, logged on for the first time for me, really, to go on to iFollow, and was told that I couldn't sign in. Now, Ollie, I know you had the same problem as me, and as I say, hundreds, thousands of people, league-wide issues this was. The iFollow service, quite frankly, just didn't work for the first 15 minutes of the game. And obviously, this is when Reading conveniently scored their only goal of the game. Football League have come out since and said that their server provider were instructed to have enough capacity. They didn't, for whatever reason. Really, it was just a shambles.
Yeah, it was typical of the EFL, if I can say that sort of thing, because I've watched games on iFollow when I've been at uni, the midweek games, and had no real issues with the service down. I think it's been great since it's been brought in the last couple of years, and obviously it gives fans who are a bit further afield opportunity to watch Reading games, but clearly, as you say, it just seems as though the server wasn't ready for that sort of level of demand with everyone watching the games, obviously at home this weekend. And I think you just have to hope that it's fine for these final eight games now. But yeah, it's typical that we had to miss our only goal of the game, and almost you almost knew that when it came back that we wouldn't be seeing any more goals apart from that one that we missed. So it's important to stress that obviously it had nothing to do with Reading themselves. It was a league-wide issue, and the clubs themselves, it was out of their control. But typical of the EFL, yeah, I would say so.
And Adam, I almost called this show, or this episode of the show, I Don't Follow, because that's just how it felt. And it did feel, I don't know if yourself was tuning in for with that service, but it did feel like you kind of, you know, you'd waited all this time and you'd got so near to the action beginning, and you'd set up, if you paid your 10 or you got your season ticket, everything seemed ready and you were ready. And yet the only thing that you really, really needed to be ready just wasn't there.
Yeah, it really is typical. I mean, the only goal that we scored, it came when people weren't even watching. I think someone even streamed it on Twitter and he was pretty much labelled as the people's hero. But yeah, it was just awful, really. People have paid for their season tickets, and this needed to act as a substitution, really, So it's really, really poor on the EFL's part, because you've got to remember that people aren't allowed in the stadium. So this is effectively what I was saying, their substitute. And it's not a good enough service. They need to have it right for next week. Otherwise, they're going to face a massive backlash. I can understand with the capacity, but for the amount that some people pay for their season tickets, you know, it's not just Reading, because Reading, in terms of season ticket prices, are actually quite reasonable. Whereas some other clubs, it's not as good. So, you know, considering the amount that some people pay per game in terms of their season ticket, it just isn't a good enough service. It needs to be better.
Well, as you say, all eyes will be on the iFollow service, I suppose, in more ways than one, really, for next Saturday's fixtures. And, you know, if they've dodged giving out refunds, obviously, for 15 minutes for the first ones, or dodged letting people have a free game as an add-on. But if there's problems on Saturday, then maybe that's the sort of thing we'll see. Let's speak about the good news, as we've missed it, basically. But Lucas Schau's goal was, I think, a pretty decent goal. It was nice to have that sort of relatively free-flowing movement. Good ball out to, I think, it's Gunter down the right-hand side. Meite getting involved. Good ball across. Lucas Schau in the middle. And Ollie, it was just so straightforward. Schau putting the ball away, like he's not been away for several months.
Yeah, we said last week how big a miss he'd been when he'd been out injured, and sort of how good it would be to have him back. And yeah, it was a fantastic sort of first time instinctive finish. You know, the sort of finish you'd expect from a striker of his quality. And you know, I think we saw obviously then when he came off later in the game, sort of how much Reading missed him. And you saw it even in that sort of opening sort of 10. Well, we didn't see it because of the iFollow issue, but sort of it became evident that he was the focal point and that Reading had sort of been lacking. And you saw when George Puskas came on that he didn't have quite the same effect. And I think that sort of that goal epitomised, you know, how big a miss Lucas Schau has been for Reading and how big a miss he could be for Reading. I don't know how long he's going to be out for now, but certainly when he came off on Saturday, our attacking threat sort of diminished rapidly.
Yeah, and that's the thing, Adam, isn't it? What did you make of Reading in that kind of period? Certainly after Schau went off of being 1-0 up. Was it a case, did you think, that Reading looked at least like they could make it 2-0, or did you think that there was not actually much hope for the second goal?
Yeah, I mean, after Schau came off, I think everyone was deflated, you know, not just physically, I think mentally as well. That does something to the players. And after that, you're wondering, oh, are we really going to get a second goal? Because lately, we haven't been really finishing off teams. And I'm not sure if that's because of the way that we play or whether that's a mental thing. Maybe it's a bit of both, where we take the lead and then we're thinking, oh God, we can't concede a goal. And for me, we need to now go on and finish the game off, because we're losing points like this. I see last week's result as two drop points, because we had it in our hands and then we just let go of it. And then Puskas came on and it just never really got going after that. I mean, I'm quite happy with our front line, but yeah, Puskas was quite ineffective for me, to be honest.
Well, that's the thing. And I'll throw some positives out there before I talk about Puskas, because I thought Swift and Elise as the midfield partnership were really decent. I think Elise kind of towards second half as the game got a bit more, as we got penned in a bit more, it didn't suit him. He got taken off, so fair enough. But I thought those two were, you know, as decent a technical midfield pairing as you can really demand at this level. Then we had, you know, Puskas up front. It felt to me like that second half as if he didn't, but just basically didn't do enough. There's that argument with Puskas, isn't there, where you can make the point that his abilities are things that aren't so obvious to the eye. His running off the ball, his hold-up play, his work rate. But those sort of things I didn't personally see when I was trying to look out for them on the weekend. There were a couple of occasions as well. He gave the ball away in a really bad position on the touchline in our own half, which led to Stoke hitting the post. A completely baffling pass that he made. He also, there was another one when I think it was Obita got down the left-hand side, put a decent ball in the box on a bit of a counter-attack. Puskas, 25 yards from goal, completely useless, that is. Another one which wasn't Puskas, but Yaku Meite broke into the box in the towards the end of the second half. Had about three options to his left, ended up not knowing what to do and shot into a defender. And Ollie, that it raises, we'll talk about the goal that we conceded in the second, but it raises the question of what was the worst crime, really? Was it failing to score that second goal, or was conceding the equaliser the kind of worst crime?
Yeah, I mean, just a quick one on Michael Olise, quickly you mentioned him. I thought he was fantastic. I thought, you know, I can't speak highly enough of Michael Olise at the moment. I think he sort of glides around the pitch of effortlessly. So I can't get my words out today. Sort of had some great moments of skill and sort of forced a great save from Jack Butland as well. And as you say, he went to his show a little bit in the second half, but I thought it was a great performance from him. But yeah, I think as the second half sort of wore on, you know, we started sitting deeper and deeper and sort of never really tried to get the ball up to George Puskas. So in some ways, I sort of feel a little bit sorry for him because he didn't have too much service and he sort of had to come deeper into his own half to try and get the ball, and that's how he sort of gave that ball away very cheaply for Tyrese Campbell to hit the post. So it's not entirely his fault, but he struggled really up front there at all. Yeah, both the not trying to get the second goal and the conceding of the goal were both very, very poor. I think for me, probably the worst of it is not trying to get that second goal to try and kill the game off, because Stoke offered barely any threat throughout the entire game. As I say, you know, that they hit the post with Campbell and Tom Ince, I think, forced Raphael into quite a good save in the first half. Sorry, but other than that, Stoke were pretty, you know, they didn't attack at all really. So it was there for them to try and get that second goal. And certainly, if we'd gone 2-0 up, there was no way that Stoke were coming back into the game. So it's just a case of, you know, we sat deeper and deeper. We didn't get the ball up at all, and that's a very, very dangerous game to play. And, you know, we brought on subs in Renamota come on for Olise and Charlie Adam came on for Ovie Ajayi, which obviously, you're taking off two fairly attacking players for two fairly defensive players, and made it even harder for Reading to try and get any attacks going. And in the end, you know, we got punished for it. And as I say, that's sort of what you have to come to expect, because you can't expect to sit deep and not try and go for the ball. And obviously Stoke, as I say, didn't really push Reading at all the entire game, but Reading perhaps then switched off a little bit for that corner. You know, as I'm sure we'll get onto, the defending was horrific, but I think Reading have got to try and get that second goal to stop that from happening in the first place.
Same question to you, Adam. Is it a case that the biggest sin was not making it 2-0 or letting it go to 1-1?
I think we've got to look at it like this. Like you say, is it a bigger crime to score one goal against Stoke City at home, or is it a bigger crime just to concede one goal against Stoke City at home? Now, a couple of years ago, Stoke were in the Premier League, and I think that it's reasonable to expect that we may concede one per game at home. But to score just one goal at home, no matter the opposition, it's not really good enough. I think we need, as I say, to go on and kill off games. I think we're missing that at the moment. As I said in my article a few days ago, we need to make marginal gains and we need to have goal scorers across the pitch. And I guess we've really got that in Mate, Zhao, Ajayi chips in as well. Hopefully Olise can as well. And hopefully from there, we can go on and score. We're not just relying on one player. And I hope that we're not going to rely on Zhao, because you never know when he's going to be injured and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that is the danger with Jan. We'll talk about him in Mailbag and Olise as well. There's quite a few questions on him. But to the inevitable, sadly, actually before the inevitable, quick note that the refereeing was bad. Pretty average thing to say for a team that's just not won a game. But yeah, the two decent penalty shouts Reading had. Decent, I'd say, no better than that, but both turned down. And generally speaking, felt like the Stoke, perhaps it's, I would have felt unkind to say it was like classic Tony Pulis level Stoke of, you know, being a bit dirty and everything before the game. Having watched the game, I can tell you that's exactly what it's like. So there was no two ways about that, which is a bit of a shame. But in terms of the goal we conceded, I mean, it's a corner ball in the last 5 minutes of the game. Anything can happen. I get that. It's a difficult moment. And perhaps maybe you can say the fans being in your corner would make you be a bit more alert. Difficult to say, really. But generally speaking, when a corner gets delivered and there's two men unmarked to win a header at the far post, and then another header goes in, I kind of watched all of the players over watching the replay a few times. And Swift doesn't follow his man to begin with. But then there's another Stoke man, those two men that I talked about who won the first header. One of them's marked by John Swift. Not an ideal situation anyway. The other one isn't marked at all, definitely not ideal. Then the ball comes back in. You can argue that Gunter and Richards don't really deal with it, but just generally speaking, everyone is ball watching. Everyone's letting it go. It's got strong, maybe the goal is different, but this game for me, Ollie, just had strong sort of memories of when we, I think it's Hull at home earlier in the season, which we drew 1-1, late goal again for a game we should have won. And these home games are the thing that is the difference between Reading being a potential top six team and a mid-table team at the moment.
Yeah, that's what I thought after the game. I think, you know, you win that game at the weekend, you hold on for the 3 points, and you're only 6 points off the playoffs, which perhaps in the grand scheme of things doesn't sound like too much compared to the 8 points we currently are. But you can't underestimate sort of what confidence that win would have given the side, especially going into Derby next weekend, who are a side just above Reading. I think if we'd won at the weekend and then beat Derby, we would have overtaken Derby. So that goal sort of kills, for me, sort of any playoff hopes. I think you have to, we spoke last week about, you know, getting off to the best possible start. And in many ways we did, getting that goal early on. But the longer the game went on, I think I said to you at the weekend that during the game, that the longer this goes on, the more I can see Reading conceding, because they were just sitting deeper and deeper. And ultimately that corner comes, and obviously Stoke have got some very tall players in their side, you know, the likes of Sam Vokes and Danny Batt, who are obviously very hard to defend against. But yeah, just the defending was comical, really. I mean, I've got no idea where Charlie Adam is going. He starts off the corner in the middle of the box and ends up being some way off, almost by wide 26. So yeah, the marking is poor. I know Bowen said that a lot of the players were sort of waiting for Liam Moore or Michael Morrison to do something, but it's just ball watching a lot of the time. And there's a fantastic sort of breakdown of how that goal goes in over on a Tyler end from Callum, and goes into great detail sort of on all the different stages of that goal, but just infuriating to concede, really, I suppose.
Yeah, the thing is with Moore and Morrison, they're both kind of flat-footed. You can also pick up, you can maybe argue Gav McLeary can do more from his position. It's just one of those. I think in a way it's reassuring, because there isn't one player I have to pick on or one player we should pick on this. It's all of them. No one's safe. And that's just how it is. But Adam, final word on the recap then before we hear from Mark Bowen and go into the mailbag. Three of our 9 home games against teams that are currently in the bottom half have been won. Really, if you want to be a playoff team, I think it has to be more like 7 or 6, maybe even 8 if you want to go for the automatic. And we are just not, whatever it is, we're just not at that level at the moment.
Yeah, we have to win those games. You know, not to sound arrogant or anything, but those are the games that we must win. It is a must win. Although we can't underestimate those teams at the bottom, because obviously at the moment they're fighting for their lives at the moment, and especially in these circumstances with COVID-19 and everyone's fighting to escape relegation, we need to be winning those games, and we need to make the Majeski a fortress, to be honest. And we did that very well in the second half of the 2011-12 season. Everyone was getting behind the team, that sort of thing. And we have to take our chances at home, because, you know, going to anywhere away in the Championship is a struggle. And, you know, we spent the last couple of seasons down at the bottom of the Championship. And perhaps this is one of the reasons why, because we can't take chances and we can't win the games that we should be winning. And, you know, we can only go for so long at the bottom of the Championship table or in and around the relegation zone before we go through the trapdoor. I think this season we've been a lot better, and I hope now in these however many, I think it's the next 8 games, we can build some momentum and be in a higher mid-table position. And if we can do that, then it gives us a platform to build on. But if we don't, and we end up in a similar position to what we've ended up in the past couple of seasons, then we're slowly sliding down the table yet again. And that is really not good, especially with our wage bill and other factors.
I suppose that's the beauty of it. In a way, we do get to find out whether it'll be one way or another. It's got to get better or it's got to get worse. And I suppose at least I'm relatively optimistic that it is going to get better before at least it gets worse again, because we've had enough of that recently. Right, well, let's hear from Mark Bowen and what he had to say after the game, and then we'll jump into the mailbag, which I can say is bulging.
Yeah, and you know, it's happened thinking every team in the country, not just us, but as you know, key times in the game, you know. Didn't deal with the initial one in the corner. We give a sloppy corner away, but, you know, you've got to put demands on each other then. You know, we talk about in training and when we're preparing for set plays, we're getting first contacts on the ball. Okay, sometimes you can't do that because when they've got people like Sam Vokes and that in the box and the lad Bath, if you like, you know, they're going to be favourites at times, but you should recognise that and you know, and almost expect them to win that ball and deal with the second ball, which we didn't. You know, it's a key time. So, you know, I've told the lads and just that's my frustration. You know, we should be more organised and putting more demands on ourselves in those situations, you know.
Send in your views to thetarnhurstend@gmail.com and have your say in the mailbag.
Okay, starting us off this week then is John Hyde, who says, should we cash in our chips for Puskás now when his value is still high and get in a more like-for-like replacement for Lucas Schau? And to me, that kind of reads as, should we get someone who's effectively a better penalty box striker than someone who, you know, as Puskás, we say, a bit more of a target man, hold up the play into space sort of man. And that is, I think the difficulty is with that for me, Ollie, is that cashing in for Puskás when his value is high now, I'm not sure that now is the time that we can say that. I'm not sure we can really say that, you know, we'll get our money back. We paid £8 million for him. Is he increased in value? You'd probably say yes, but there's, you know, the pandemic crisis has completely chops the transfer market down to, you know, whatever percentage it's going to be of its normal level. So I don't think we are going to, unless we're in a real bad crisis that we have to get X million for a player, he might be that player, I don't think we're going to sell him this summer because I just don't think there is value for us in doing that.
Yeah, I think I said last week that, you know, we might be forced to sell sort of one of the star names in the side this summer, and Puskás is potentially one of those with his value, but it's very, very difficult because obviously, you know, he's not at the season that we all hoped he would have done when he signed last summer, and obviously he comes with a price tag, and that's perhaps put a bit more expectation on him than he normally would have had. And I'm torn with Puskás really, because in some ways you almost want to give him more time to hopefully, you know, let him become that 20 goal striker that we hope he can be, but at the same time, do you want to take that risk? Because he is one of the more highly valued players in the squad, and there is certainly interest in him. If you read reports in the media and believe them, in Turkey especially, there's a lot of interest in George Puskás, and he is very highly rated. You know, he did very well for Romania at the 21 European Championships last summer. Obviously, he's played for Inter Milan, so that certainly, maybe not in this country because of people have seen what he's done this season for Reading, but certainly around Europe, I think he's still very, very highly rated. So whether it's a case of trying to get that money back for him, I don't know. I think it depends on how bad the financial situation is and whether we need that money, because if it's a case of having to sell one of those star names to try and get that money, then Puskás might be the answer to that.
Yeah, and there's another question here from Guy Reed. Adam is saying, if we had to sell one of Moore, Swift or Puskás, which one would you rather sell? I mean, just to jump in with my thought on that, I'd probably say Swift is the one I'd protect the most. Yeah, maybe Liam Moore the least, because really, is Liam Moore's value going to increase? You know, again, pandemic aside, is his value going to increase in the next 12, 18 months? I don't think so, as Puskás, as Ollie said, does have that potential.
Well, that's the thing with Moore, because a couple of years ago when he received, I think it was the club received an offer from Brighton, you know, it was quite a bit of money. And I think his value has gone down since then, not just age. I think it's just the fact that we've been down at the bottom as well of the Championship. So I don't think we'd get all that much for Moore, if I'm being honest, even though his deal, I think because he signed his deal after he put in the transfer request, I think it takes him to 2022 or 2023, something like that. He signed quite a long-term deal. So that might push his value up a little bit. But I don't think he's worth as much as he used to be worth. On Puskás, it depends on how his deal last summer has been constructed as well, because I'm not sure, and I don't think so anyway, that Reading were able to pay his full price tag last summer. I think we're paying some this summer. It will be interesting to see how that deal has been put together, because if we sell him and we haven't paid everything for him yet, we probably won't get the full amount. I'm not sure how everything works out with that. I agree with you, Mark, on Swift. I think we need to protect him the most. I think he's become an integral part of our team. So it really is between Puskas and Moore. Who has the bigger impact in the dressing room? Probably Moore, because he's captain. But has our defence been good enough over the past couple of seasons with him at the back? Is he overrated? I don't know. But I think I would probably sell Moore. And perhaps if he's worth more than Miasga at the moment, if Chelsea are willing to sell Miasga on the cheap, maybe that could be a like-for-like replacement. Especially Moore is probably going to be on very high wages, considering Gourley gave him that contract extension after handing in a transfer request. So you've got to consider that as well. Although you could also say Puskas is on high wages. But as captain of the club, I think Moore will be on high wages, and it will definitely be between Moore and Puskas. But I don't think I could choose between them. The bottom line is, I think we definitely have to protect Swift at all costs.
Yeah, and I understand that. And I think as well, you're right to mention that Moore, he happened to sign, or obviously very deliberately signed his contract after that transfer request, which makes makes it ever more hazy, makes it more complicated. I think if we sell Puskas this summer, we still have to pay all that money to Inter Milan. I think you're right in saying that we owe them over a number of years. Same for Lucas Shaw, apparently. So, yeah, well, it muddies the waters ever more, which is not particularly something that we want in this scenario. But Callum McLeod asks, how significant do you think Lucas Shaw's injury was to the result? Ollie, your confidence in us getting a second goal / winning that game with Lucas Shaw on the pitch, how do you feel?
I think it's easy sort of to make the correlation that when Shaw went off, we didn't look as good going forward. But I think at the same time, you have to consider, sort of, as I said earlier, how deep we began to sit on the pitch, and whether that would have still been the case if Lucas Joao had been on the pitch and not George Puskas. I think Joao is a better striker than Puskas, so you can definitely say that Reading's attacking quality went down when Joao went off injured. But whether it's had an impact on the result, as I say, I think Reading would still have tried to defend very deep and not really gone for that second goal, even if Lucas Joao was on the pitch. It's hard to say, but I think the goal probably might well have happened if Lucas Shaw was still on the pitch.
Well, what I can guarantee you is that Lucas Shaw would not have finished the 90 minutes. I don't think that ever would have happened, really, would it? So I think Shaw maybe only plays 60 minutes anyway, maybe even comes off after the first half. We knew he had a hamstring problem before. It's the same hamstring problem, which is a bit of a bugger, but I don't think he makes too much of a result. We might well have been sat here right now saying, God, didn't Lucas Joao drop off in the second half because he wasn't fit, having not played for several months? So I think it's difficult to start saying, yeah, might have got a second goal, certainly might have scored again in the first half, was looking sharp, but yeah, not too much, I don't think we can guarantee on that. Jack Killick saying, under Mark Bowen, do you think we are too conservative when we have a one goal lead? Should we do more to kill the game off by getting a second? Similarly, Matt Williams has tweeted us as well, saying, am I being unfair in thinking that Reading have a particular problem in killing games off when on top? Is it poor game management, a lack of plan B, bad substitutions? Often it feels like we're doing okay defensively, but we're keeping the ball further up the pitch. When we then bring on more defensively minded players who just put us under pressure because we never retain the ball or pose any threat to the opposition's goal, sometimes we mistake removing all attacking intent or makes us better defensively. Adam, this is a tough one, isn't it? Because on the one hand, we started with a very attacking midfield of Elise, Ajari and Swift down the middle. Now, to bring on Winamoto in that scenario when you're 1-0 up, for me, that's, I think, by and large, we'd all agree that's kind of common sense to bring on someone who can defensively do a bit more. You still got two other players. Yeah. I think the substitutions came a bit late. The lack of plan B, I don't think we necessarily need a plan B against Stoke at home when you're 1-0 up. I don't think that's a scenario which you really need to, you can plan for it, obviously, but to plan for it is to massively change the formation, for example, I don't think is necessarily too worth it. So, I don't know. Personally, I just kind of feel like this is a sign that it's Reading's kind of ruthless streak. We don't take our chances when we're 1-0 up. and our lack of concentration when the opposition get a sniff to take it off us.
I think attack is the best form of defence a lot of the time. I know it's a cliche, but I think it really is. Perhaps we set ourselves up for it at the beginning when we didn't line up with either Pele or Rinomoto. Obviously, we'll get on to Pele. But we only had, I think our deepest line midfielder was Swift. And that makes me feel a bit uneasy, especially because we've got then Ajaria and Elise as attacking options. I think we did need a Rinomoto in there from the start. But another thing, I think Charlie Adam came on as well for Ajaria around the same time as Rinomoto came on. I think we do need to kill games off. I think we have the players to do it with Ajaria, with Mete, with Zhao, even Elise. I think we do have the goals there. We just need to show our potential. And I do agree that we are too conservative at times. We need to keep on going forward and kill games off, because we'll only keep on dropping points if we play like we did in the second half last weekend. And that could be costly for our league position.
Well, we're going to face a lot better teams than Stoke as well, which is just a fact of the matter, and how we deal with that is a problem. I think as well, just to add one more thought on that point, I think it's difficult when Stoke were quite as bad as they were. They weren't the worst side of the Daisies this season, but they almost lulled us into a false sense of security to think, oh, these guys aren't going to get us. And they kind of had a warning shot with the hit in the post, which even then was a bit like ours, a bit of a lucky break to have that attack. Maybe the players just kind of thought they'd won it already, which when you're 14th in the championship, probably not a good idea to start thinking you've just won games at 1-0. Gabriel Sutton moves us on then to ask, has Project Restart given Michael a new Elise of life? Very nice. Adding on to that, Fenner saying, should we use the remaining 8 games to give our local talent, such as Richards, Elise, Osho and Rinomoto, although born in Leeds, I'm not sure how local he is, more regular game time ahead of a summer clear out. Ollie, Michael Elise, you mentioned him earlier on, really decent game. Were you surprised to see him start?
Not really, to be honest. I think I was surprised to see the midfield three that we did in terms of Swift sitting a little bit deep, which probably isn't his more natural. I think we would have been better off having someone like Andy Rinomoto in there, or Pele, who was mentioned that he wasn't fit enough, apparently, according to Mark Byrne. But we spoke about that last week, that I think Michael Elise could play a massive role in these sort of next 8-9 games, because he's a real, real talent, as I said earlier. I'm incredibly, incredibly excited about what the future holds for him, and he's still only 18 years old, and he could play a key role for us, because that boy's sort of attacking talent he has. As I say, he glides around the pitch so easily and makes it look so easy. You know, he was involved in that first goal. I think he played the ball out to Gunter or out to Mete, and he controls that midfield, you know, so confidently for someone so young. And I think he can play a very, very key role for us. Whether it's a case of if someone like John Swift does leave this summer, I'd agree with you both in the fact that we should protect him. But if a big bid does come in for him, then someone like Michael Elise can take on that mantle of being that sort of creative player in the midfield.
Yeah, and Adam, we just did speak about it a bit last week, but again, the question comes up because it's always tempting, isn't it, to just throw on more, you know, younger players and everything like that, especially when you are mid-table with the season drifting away. If you accept that we win less games over the next 8, you know, maybe we win 2 instead of 4, for example, would you be happy with that on the basis that we give, as Venice says, you know, Richards, Elise and Rinomoto all featured against Stoke, but Osho as well, maybe Tom McIntyre. There's a few young players who are around that we can give time to. Would you be happy with effectively risking the results in favour of their game time?
It's a dilemma, because even though we do want to give our academy graduates a chance, we really do now have to build momentum and get away from that lower mid-table championship position. because if we end the season poorly, then I don't know what will happen, to be honest. I remember at the end of 2015-16 season, we gave the likes of Dickey and Barrett a good go in the squad under McDermott. And I remember losing the game at, I think it was Blackburn Rovers, it was 3-1 or something like that. McDermott ends up getting the sack for it. And I think I remember him saying later on that he really wanted to build something at Reading for the next season. Obviously, Yapstan came in. So we definitely should give the academy graduates a go, but they need to be beneficial to our team. And they need to be in the team for the long term, because if we give Osho a go and we release him at the end of June, then what's the point in giving him a go? We need to focus on players who are going to be here for the long term. And I think that includes Elise, if a really big doesn't come in for him. I think that means McIntyre. If Moore does go, I think we will bring in a replacement for Moore if he does go, but I think he might be on the bench next season. I think he's good enough to be on the bench next season. Richards is already in there. I think he's done well, but there's room for improvement. And Rinomota, I want him to be, I don't know what the word is for it, but the core of our team, really. Because he's an academy graduate. He adapted to senior football so well. And it's a shame that we saw him on the bench last Saturday. I thought he should have been in the starting lineup. And as I said as well in one of my articles, if we can include some of the under 23 players in our squad, and if they're good enough, then it helps with their understanding as well, because they already have an understanding from the games that they've played together in the under 23s. But the bottom line is they need to be good enough. Otherwise, we're going to slip down the table and it'll be another disappointing season for us. I think the ideal finish for me now would be in probably 12th or something like that. I don't think we're ready to go up or anything. And I think we're still in the process of rebuilding. I'm finally happy now, I think, with the attacking front line. I think we're building something there in terms of Ijaria, Mate, Zhao. Like, they're established first teamers now. They're the first names on the team sheet. And we really do need that stability and to add a few names in the summer, but not go too mad with it. Because we have a platform now. We just need to build on it.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? We have a reasonable amount of young players already in the team, which is quite nice. So hopefully we can kind of keep that up. It certainly seems like Mark Bowen has that intention as well. Final couple of questions then, and this is going to be a bit more of a quick fire bit, as they're the kind of slightly more fun questions you can put at the end of the show or at the end of the mailbag to hypothesise over. Royals 360 asking us, which of the out-of-contract/loan players do you think will be here next season? I'll go from both of you, and I do kind of own. I'll ask you which one loan player do you think will be here, because we're not going to get them all. So which of the one loan players would you prioritise? And Sean Burgess also asked, if you could bring back one ex-Royal in their prime to improve the current team, who would it be? I'm going to think a bit more about that ex-Royal one. Loan player, if I had to pick one loan player to stay, probably just have to be Pele at the moment for me, really, Ollie. I think it's just a case of he's a good championship level midfielder, pretty reliable, 30 games out of 46, he'll give you a really decent performance. And, you know, that central midfield, if it has all the players we have now, basically going next year with a bit more experience, it's a pretty decent setup.
Yeah, I mean, Pele plays a position which we're sort of lacking in at the moment. He's the only real sort of player who can play that proper defensive shield in front of the back four. I mean, Rinomota has played there, but he's a bit more attacking, sort of tries to turn defence into attack. So Pele sort of is the only sort of player that can play that sort of role. And actually, he was that answer is going to almost link into my answer for the one extra to bring back. But yeah, and I said last week we should try and get Pele. Obviously, Ajar is the obvious answer in the fact that he's probably going to sign anyway. I'd also put Matt Miazga in there because I think he's been probably. I think for me, when Miazga's at his best, he's probably our best centre back. So I wouldn't be against trying to get him back either. But again, it's all about finances.
And your ex-Royal as well.
So on that basis, and the fact that I do think we need that sort of strong defensive shield. I was going to say Brynjar Gunnarsson. Obviously, there are better, probably technical players. Obviously, probably the obvious answer might be someone like Gylfi Sigurdsson, because if you brought in Sigurdsson in his prime into this championship squad, then he'd probably, you know, take Reading to the championship title all by himself. But in terms of a position we need, I really want someone who can properly protect that back four. And for that reason, I'd have to go Brynjar Gunnarsson.
You know, I'm going to throw in a wild card as well, actually, to an extent. And I'm going to say Mikel Antonio. It'd be his absolute bolshy nature, if you like, of turning defence into attack and of getting on the end of balls. And he's got a really good finish on him and his athleticism. And, you know, he's an all-round Premier League package now, which we obviously didn't have back in the day. But I think him at the spearhead of this attack, with players like Ajari or Swift providing for him, and then you've got some pretty decent, you know, relatively decent wingers putting balls in from the flanks. I think he'd be a really decent shout at the moment. Bit of a wild card one. Adam, what would you say about yours, and also for your loan player you want to see next season?
It depends, really, because if you count Ajari as a loan player, I think we have an obligation to buy him. Then I would select Ajari. If not, I think I would go Miazga, purely because of the reason that Moore and Morrison might go soon. Moore because he might attract interest from a bigger club, maybe not. And Morrison because I think he's about 32 now. And he may decline like McShane did, I'm not sure. But I think I would go with Miazga, and perhaps it could be a Miazga-McIntyre future centre-back partnership. Pelle's very good. So I think he'd probably be my next choice after Miazga, but yeah, I think I'll bring back Matt Miazga, and I hope that he could have an impact like he did as well in the second half of the 2018-19 season with Martinez, because he made such an impact as well on that defence, because we were leaking quite a lot of goals, and he was kind of solid in that central defensive partnership with Moore, and I think a lot of people forget that, despite his mistakes. In terms of the ex-Reading player, I think I would probably go, as you said, for Antonio, because I think we need a replacement on that left-hand side. Even though we've got Abita and Richards, I think we need someone like a Mo Barrow-type player who can scare championship defences. We had that with Jimmy Kebbe, but we need it now on that left-hand side. I think Mate is good on the right-hand side because he provides us with extra goals, and he provided the cross as well for the goal for Zhao last weekend. I think Ajaria plays very well in the centre. Elise is playing very well. Maybe there's a case for Elise playing on the left wing, but I would agree with you, Mark, about Antonio. In terms of former players overall in their prime, it would be a stretch to say Marcin Keown or Matt Upson. But yeah,
yeah, maybe.
I think out of the realistic, well, probably not realistic, but out of the obvious options, I would go with Antonio.
Yeah, maybe Les Ferdinand in his prime as well would be a decent shout. Right, then don't think too many people expecting us to say Mikel Antonio when that question came in, so that was a decent wild card to throw in. Let's talk about another, we've already talked about Lucas Shaw a lot, but let's just update you on the situation with him in News Bites and tell you about a friendly that has taken place today.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
Right, News Bites pretty short these days because there's no academy or women's football to talk about, but we will just quickly update you on the Lucas Shaw situation if you didn't see. Mark Bowen said that he did not feel a pull on his hamstring, but he did kind of obviously feel something. He's going to be taken for a scan, which we're awaiting the results of, so hopefully it turns out just to be a sort of precaution. You can see pretty clearly on the cameras that he was really frustrated with coming off, obviously, with the injury, sat there feeling his right hamstring. You could just see basically Mark Bowen just shaking his head saying, I'm not going to risk you if you feel anything at all, which is a fair enough thing to do. The other thing that's gone on today is a friendly against Oxford, potentially getting us ready for a championship encounter next season with Oxford in the playoffs. Reading winning 2-1 This is kind of 3 30-minute periods, Ollie, that they kind of played out. There must be a mistake on the Oxford website. They've done a report on it because they say that Charlie Adams scored a header to make it 1-1, which I'm baffled by, and Danny Loader scoring the winner. A bit surprised I was, actually, to see Danny Loader playing.
Yeah, me too, actually. I thought we'd probably, well, obviously we didn't see it, but I thought we'd see him last of him in a Reading shirt. But Reading have released a report in the last couple of minutes as well, and I can confirm that Charlie Adams did bundle it over the line, according to the Reading website.
Oh, that makes much more sense.
Yeah. but it just seems it was a pretty good run-out for the players that didn't play at the weekend or didn't start, should I say. I think McCleary played, Willem Mossa played, Felipe Araruna played. As far as I can tell, I think Lucas Boyer also played, which is obviously good news considering that he tested positive for coronavirus last week, so good to see him involved. A pretty decent run-out against, from what I can see, a fairly strong Oxford side. There's a picture in the report of Jamie Mackey, James Henry and Rob Dickey playing for Oxford, so obviously a very strong former Reading connection there. But yeah, Oxford are a good side, as you say, might well be playing championship football next season. So for almost a second string Reading side, I think McIntyre played as well by the looks of it, Tyler Blackett, Ivan Nasika. It's certainly not a bad thing, obviously building those players' fitness up, because they might well be needed. Obviously from next week onwards we get to 2 games a week, so you're going to see the squad used a lot more, so to give those players a chance to build up their match fitness is certainly not a bad thing.
No, it's an interesting one, and that's our team of second string doesn't actually sound that bad. Not that I want to play it entirely in the championship, but yeah, that's not a bad few options to have. The sort of names you mentioned as well, Felipe Araruna, just Ayub Timbay as well, he was on the bench on the weekend. Our players have just gently forgotten about in a way. So I suppose it will be interesting to see if those guys come back. And come back they might in the Saturday 27th of June kickoff at 1 p.m. at Derby. That'll be what we're talking about next in Big Match Preview.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
I'll say that again for those who want to buy a match pass. 1 p.m. the Derby game kicks off at Pride Park. There's no point telling you where the stadium is. You can't go. 1 p.m. and presumably iFollow will start beginning about 1:15 p.m. So don't rush into that one too quickly. Derby, weird team, I think, to be playing. 3-2 win at Millwall they had on their first game back on Saturday. Louis Sibley with a hat-trick. You probably haven't heard of him because no one really had until this game. I think those are certainly among his, or if not his first, championship goals. Adam, this is a good time to play them, I think, because we have spoken last week about teams who might struggle in the post-pandemic world, with those teams who are reliant on their home form. Potentially, obviously they won last week Derby, but they are the second best side at home in the division. 2 defeats, without fans, that will drop in terms of, you know, how much they benefit from that, inevitably. Hopefully we can make use of that, and ideal moment, I think.
Yeah, I agree. It's the best time to play them. And I think we've come away from Pride Park a few times very happy. I remember Yakubu with his only goal for Reading in the FA Cup in 2014-15. I think it was even the same season we had the likes of Appiah, Hector and McCleary scoring as well on the last day of the championship season. I think it was 2014-15 against Steve McLaren, which pretty much ended their playoff hopes. So there is good history there. I think it is a good time to play them. We do, though, need to keep an eye on Louis Sibley. I saw the match highlights of them playing against Millwall away last weekend with, obviously, you mentioned his hat-trick. And it wasn't just his hat-trick. He's an 18-year-old midfielder, and he was at the centre of absolutely everything that they did from the looks of the highlights. So we need to keep an eye on him. Maybe that would be a motivation for us to include a Rinomota or a Pele in the starting lineup. I don't think we can set up the same way as we did last weekend, the way we did at home. And I definitely think we do need a Rinomoto or Pele there, and that could be the difference between a loss or a draw or a win. So definitely, it's a good time to face them, and hopefully we can get something out of it, fingers crossed. I don't think we will, but we will keep our fingers crossed.
Well, I think it's interesting that you mentioned he was at the centre of the play, because I agree. I think we definitely will see a Rinomoto or Pele, or even both, come into the lineup, because Derby, they have creative players abound. Tom Lawrence on the wing as well, pretty decent. Some lad called Wayne Rooney, who is going to be playing centre mid, who started against Millwall. So, yeah, there's plenty to keep an eye on, and therefore you have to be a bit extra careful. Ollie, here's a depressing stat for you then. We had our 1-0 ripped away from us in the prediction league just as we were talking at the top of the show. We very, very nearly came within 3 points. Dan Wimbush, 1-1 he plucked for. So 20 points he's got now, third in the prediction league. Sims now just behind on 23 points because he got 2-2, so it's a point. I'm top on 31. When it comes to predicting this game, it's probably one of the hardest games of the season to predict, isn't it? We had the Stoke game, at least we had some relative idea of how good the teams were. I don't really know how good Derby are this year, I'm going to be brutally honest, especially with their home form being, you know, so unpredictable now that their fans have gone, having it been so good. I really don't know where to start on predicting this game.
Yeah, they're a very strange team. Well, I say strange, I mean, they seem to, sort of looking at their team sheet from the Millwall game, it's quite clearly a balance of youth and experience, which we spoke about last week. You know, you've got the likes of Andre Wisdom, Craig Forsyth, Martin Wadcombe, obviously very experienced, and Tom Lawrence as well, very experienced Championship players, and obviously Wayne Rooney, as you say as well, who's, you know, by all accounts made a very good start to life in the Championship, and certainly probably a bit too good for this league because he seems to be controlling games very well. But at the same time, they've got a lot of exciting younger players like Louis Sibley, who I did have to look up after his hat-trick at the weekend, but I have to say three fantastic goals. Scored a fantastic goal against Blackburn as well before the lockdown. But I think he made his debut for Derby against us in a 3-0, their 3-0 defeat against us just before Christmas. So, you know, they've got him in there, Max Bird, Jason Knight as well. So there's a couple of decent younger players at Derby as well. So, yeah, I mean, they're only 3 points off the playoffs. You know, so they've obviously got more to play for than we have. But as I was saying earlier, it's, you know, pretty frustrating, because if we'd held on to the 1-0 win against Stoke at the weekend, and then we'd have gone into this Derby game only 3 points behind them with a better goal difference. So if we'd have got the win at Pride Park, then we would have overtaken them. So it just shows, you know, how big that goal for Stoke was at the weekend. But it's not going to be an easy game, for sure. They've got talent in that side. I rate Tom Lawrence very, very highly. I think he's a fantastic talent out on that wing. And as I say, Wayne Rooney is a childhood hero of mine. So it'd be great to see him playing against Reading. But yeah, it's going to be a very difficult game for us. If you're asking for my prediction, I might say 2-1 Derby.
Yeah, that's awkward because we had the same prediction last week and now we're going to have the same prediction this week. I do feel that way. I'm just actually really quickly, because I have a feeling that Rooney has a really decent record against us.
He scored in that 4-0 win in the FA Cup.
In eight games, he's won six, drawn two, and he scored 5 goals and assisted 2. And I think that's a decent record.
He has been playing for Man United, to be fair. I mean, we've got a very poor record against United in general, so it might just be a case of he's playing for a very good team. But yeah, no, I'd agree.
Yeah, absolutely. He scored the winner in the last time we played in the league against Man United, which was a deflected effort in the one game that Eamon Dolan took charge of Reading back in 2013. Yeah, 2 goals in the 4-3 that season again as well. A goal in the season before the 2-0 win that Man United had at Reading. So yeah, he's got a decent record against Reading, and I fancy him to continue it on the basis that momentum is, I think, going to count a lot for these sort of games. And Derby, with that win, I think there's a massive feel-good factor around your young attacking midfielder getting a hat-trick. And that will be really important. So I think with a week's rest, those players are going to be feeling good. And Reading, you know, we've just had a week of feeling not so good. So, yeah, well, I think I'm going to have to opt for 2-1 as well. Adam, where would you lay your cards on this one?
I predicted a 2-1 win against Stoke, so maybe I was a bit overly optimistic, although I did say that Zhao would get on the score sheet. I think I'm going to go with 1-0 Derby. I think they'll get our revenge on us from earlier on this season. I think Rooney will probably score the only goal of that match. But I just don't think we'll have enough this time round to win, which would be a shame because that means two games back and two games where we haven't won. But I don't see us getting anything out of this one. And I don't see us scoring either, which is a shame. But yeah, I think it'll be 1-0 Derby.
Fair enough. Well, as you know, if we are looking at the table, we are 8 points clear of the relegation zone going into this game and 8 points away from the playoffs. So either way, a win is not going to be too significant for either's chances, really. If we win, we're going to be, you know, still 8 points off the playoffs or near enough. Anyway, we're not going to be 5 points off. So, yeah, it's a good chance, I think, in a way, to go there and make use of the fact that there aren't fans there. As we've just discussed, it's a pretty low pressure game for Reading. We're not going to be too, you know, demanding as to what we do. And hopefully, you know, we're a decent side away from home. We tend to bounce back from bad results quite well. So hopefully we can continue to do that and show ourselves in a good light at Pride Park. That draws to an end the episode 226 of the Tarless Den podcast. And thank you very much, Ollie and Adam, for popping on this Monday afternoon.
No worries. Thank you. Absolute pleasure.
And we will be back next week where, as Ollie alluded to earlier, the games really start ramping up from here on in with Brentford in midweek. And then we got the Luton game that is after that. So plenty of football upcoming after what we can say is a stuttered start for Reading back in action on Saturday with a 1-1 draw. Or if you, like me, you only saw basically a 1-0 defeat is what we saw on our screens. So hopefully it is not a sign of things to come and Reading can restart the restart and get 3 points at Pride Park on Saturday. Thank you very much for listening and come on, you Arse.